not coming to this. We're going to allow each metro to respond to questions, and you have 5 minutes, not more than 5 minutes. It can be 2 minutes to respond to questions, but not more than 5 minutes. Will they take, as per the request, Cape Metro? Swartland will follow if you have, you want to respond to any of the questions. Swane, you'll be the third one. Ekurhuleni, the fourth one. Durban, the fifth. And Johannesburg, the sixth. In that order.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to start with the drug-related convictions. We have a two-pronged approach in terms of drug enforcement. The first being council-owned stock, which we target specifically to get rid of illegal activities within council-owned property. And in terms of that, the contracts or of the renters, if they partake in illegal activity, then they can be evicted, and then we approach the courts for an eviction order in that regard. So in that, we follow the conviction rate in terms of the actions very carefully. In terms of the other approach, it is generally aimed at drug traffickers as opposed to users, although we will take both. In terms of the conviction rate, at this stage, because of the backlog, unfortunately, the court doesn't take judicial notice of the fact that the substance is necessarily drugs. There is a backlog, but we monitor. But our approach, Chair, at this stage is that we break a cycle. Drugs you cannot get back, and there's a chain. A drug dealer owes somebody else, and if we take the drugs, we break that cycle. And we have that approach in terms of our crime prevention in drugs. In other words, eventually what happens is we hit a known drug dealer and we will get nothing, one because of two reasons. Either he cannot continue because of the saturation approach, or alternatively he changes his modus operandi, and then we will change our strategy in line with that. But at this stage, to give exact figures in terms of the success rate in the courts is very difficult to do, unfortunately. CPFs, in terms of legislation, I am responsible to ensure that there's attendance at CPFs. We do battle sometimes, Chair. In the city of Cape Town, we have 64 CPFs. That's not including sub-forums. And a lot of them sit at exactly the same time. So to get attendance at them, we battle. We have made inroads into that in terms of appointments we have made. We had a lot of vacant posts, which will maybe answer another question. We have filled 14 superintendent posts, which is at the level that we require to attend CPF meetings. So we've had a vast improvement at the attendance of the CPF meetings, to the extent that we report back to it at our civilian oversight as well as our portfolio committee on that indicator. Human trafficking. The approach of the human trafficking, we've been assisted through SAPS and other NGOs with training that took place in terms of what to look for and guidelines in terms of human trafficking. Our approach, and this answers the other question in terms of the sex workers in the Seapoint area and other areas, although it's reduced in the Seapoint area now. We don't only go, our approach is not only the sex workers per se, but also the brothels that keep sex workers. We've had numerous successes over the last couple of months in terms of people that have been kept against their wills, in terms of foreign nationals as well as others that have been kept against their wills in terms of being forced into sex work. And those successes speak for themselves. I'm not going to get into Sweat versus the city of Cape Town, I think, as respondent 89 in terms of that case. I mean, in that, the respondent should have been the director for public prosecutions, because we don't determine who's prosecuted or not. We don't investigate crime, we act against it, and we make the necessary arrests when necessary in terms of legislation. In terms of our statistical information of budgets vis-a-vis staff, I don't think any chief sitting around the table, even Chief Mwabu has the most, will say he has enough. The city of Cape Town, we have operational members on the ground, just over 500, which is not enough, Chair. Member to staff is 1 to nearly 2,000. If you take Metro Police, I'm not including traffic and law enforcement. It's important to know that the structure of the city of Cape Town is different. They still have a law enforcement department to deal only with bylaws, and they still have a traffic department that only does traffic. As Metro Police, I'm required to fill both those functions plus a crime prevention one. In terms of legislation, of course, I cannot prejudice traffic enforcement because that is still our main focus by law. But while doing it, we still practice crime prevention as well. So if you take Metro Police in itself, 550 members, plus, of course, the law enforcement and traffic who specialize in their fields, it takes us to 2,100. But as Metro Police, I don't have enough members. Keeping in mind that I have certain legislative requirements placed on me that are not placed on traffic and law enforcement. Training. I represent the chiefs at the national training meeting, so perhaps I should just touch on that in general quickly. SAPS helps us tremendously with training on the basis of train the trainer. In other words, the general teaches us to fish, and we must go and fish. We go and train our own members thereafter. We all have academies. We're all accredited service providers, and they help us in that regard. We cannot expect them to train our members individually. They have their own training needs to achieve. So what they do is they allow us, and General Moore gives a place on training from his own members to assist us to do train the trainer. We then go back and we empower our own members in terms of their training. And this includes all the things they've helped us with to date, crowd control, et cetera, et cetera. In terms of our basic training, we tried to get our own qualifications registered on the NQF with SAQA. Unfortunately, because we fall so much into the policing function and into the traffic function, which already have their own accredited and registered qualifications, it's not possible for us to get our own qualification. We tried to run with a SAPS qualification, but because we serve two guards, if you want, traffic and policing, we had to do both. For registration as traffic officers, we had to do all the electives of that qualification, which meant that we ended up with a qualification of about 270 credits, and you only need 130 to get the qualification, which was totally non-realistic. So we have basically decided as chiefs of police to train in terms of our legislative mandate, or legislatively what we need, which is the traffic qualification at 130 credits, and then to fill the gap with unit standards, qualified or accredited training in terms of what is required in terms of the regulations for municipal police. So having said that, we fully train in terms of what we must have legislatively, and then when we identify skills gaps in certain things, and a lot of them are more the practical skills, Chair. In other words, your arrest techniques, shooting, crowd control, etc. SAPS helps us immensely there. A present example would be, for instance, the promulgation of the Child Justice Act. SAPS helps us with the training and getting our members in line, but we don't expect SAPS to train all our thousands of members. They train the trainer, and then we go back and teach our members. Also, keeping in mind that we have national instructions in place that is a guideline in terms of what must be in place. The dismissal of the 93, I think the mere fact that they were dismissed...
Can I just interrupt you? The national instructions, can you elaborate on that one?
Chair, the national commissioner gives out national instructions on how to act in certain circumstances. In other words, where the Child Justice Act, for instance, places certain requirements on us as policing, within the policing environment of what to do, then from the National Commissioner's Office will come a national instruction of you must do when you get the following A, B, C, etc., so that we always act in terms of law. It almost, if you want, a standard operating procedure, for want of a better word, so that we all in the policing environment act the same in terms of law, that we don't do our own thing, in other words. In terms of, come back to the dismissal, I think the mere fact that we dismissed, sorry, it was 94, to when the arbitration, they were dismissed. I think, and that is prima facie of the stance of the Cape Town Metropolitan Police Department, we will not tolerate ill behavior, and we will dismiss if it comes to such actions. And I think the ripple effect, if we look at Nelson Mandela Bay Municipality of what happened there, we cannot tolerate this behavior, Chair. I'm not sure what the outcome is there, but I'll be very disappointed if it is not exactly the same outcome that we had in the city of Cape Town. We cannot tolerate this type of behavior, especially from law enforcement officials. We're still busy, although we have finally concluded this case. It is finished. There is no more avenue for them to follow. They're still trying to get reinstated, which is not going to happen. Not in the city of Cape Town anyway, Chair. I'll leave it at that. That case cost the city of Cape Town 2 million rand to finalize, which shows you how seriously we took that type of action by our members, or our ex-members. In terms of corruption, we take the same approach. We have the numbers as we stole from Johannesburg, where we put the number on our newly marked vehicles, corruption, dedicated corruption hotline. We also now have, we will soon have our own dedicated website. Plus, we have the City of Cape Town C3 process where people can anonymously report things. These are investigated fully. We're answerable in terms of all these to our civilian oversight, and we give them feedback on every single case we receive on a monthly basis. And once again, we take a zero-tolerance approach. No corruption will be hidden away, or we open about it. To the extent that where we get certain information against some members, we call in SAPS to assist us, and we even gone so far as to take 252 undercover operations, if you want, against members that we have certain information on that are acting with corruption or illegally, or whatever the case may be. Legal mandate. Our legal mandate is obtained from both the, we have so many that we serve, Chair. Firstly, in terms of Metro Police, Section 64 of the Police Service Act, 68 of 95, gives us a certain legal mandate, and the three that are covered there is traffic policing, bylaw enforcement, and crime prevention. From that, we obtain other certain legal mandates that are promulgated through other legislation, certain powers in terms of the Drugs and Drug Trafficking Act, the Criminal Procedure Act, Stock Theft Act, et cetera, et cetera. Also, of course, in terms of the National Road Traffic Act, we have certain powers and duties. And then, of course, in line with the bylaws that we enforce as well. We have extensive powers, having said that, in terms of all that legislation. So it allows us to achieve the goals that we need to achieve in terms of our mandate. Of course, we must remember that in terms of that legislation, to come back to traffic policing, as chiefs of police, we have a duty in terms of that act not to prejudice traffic enforcement within our areas of jurisdiction. So we cannot say, well, we're only going to concentrate on drugs and drug trafficking and we're going to ignore traffic. We cannot do that. In terms of that, our plan must reflect that we haven't prejudiced traffic enforcement within our areas of jurisdiction. And I think basically in terms of what was directed towards Cape Town, I don't know if I've skipped out on anything there, Chair.
The next one. I said it will be Swartland, yes. Swartland and then Tswane, and then Ekurhuleni, Durban, and then Johannesburg. If you are not ready, we can take another one. You're ready, okay?
Thank you, Chair. I'm not going to do it in chronologically order. I'm going to start with a social crime prevention question in terms of what is currently done within our area. And there's a couple of things I would like just to carry over to the committee. First of all, the Swartland Municipal Police Services, we have a social crime prevention unit. And this social crime prevention unit tackle the evils of society, if you want to call it as such, your drug-related problems, alcohol-related problems, and also issues relating to domestic violence. We do it primarily via the CPFs and the community police forums. However, we also go to schools, places of education, to present these campaigns and awareness programs. Also, the social crime prevention unit is currently very proactively involved in terms of the reintegration of displaced persons back into the community or with their families. In terms of the firearms, there's a legislative requirements in terms of issuing of firearms, and we as the Municipal Police Services and Metro Police has to adhere to this, and it needs to be in accordance to the Firearms Control Act. prescribed training needs to be needs to take place. And also, if it is found that members did not conduct themselves in terms of the legislation, further action is being taken in such a way that the permit is actually taken away from from these members. These permits or cases is directly related to domestic violence. So if our members are involved in domestic violence, we take their permits away.
How many have had of your members have
been currently up to date, we have one case. One case where one of the officers were involved in a domestic violence case, and his permit was withdrawn and is not operationally being used currently. So even if there's a court order, it gives us justifiable reason to withdraw the firearm. In terms of resources or vacant positions, we strive to fill vacant position as soon as it becomes vacant. We currently have four vacant positions, and we're in the process of filling these positions. In terms of the corruption, the same status applies. If there's any allegations of corruption, we investigate it. However, we have a problem in terms of the logistical matters pertaining to these cases. Once again, we're not a metro, so we are dependent on information from the community to report these officers who are involved in corrupt activities. However, the process, there's two processes, the disciplinary process or the labor process, and then there's a criminal process. However, as some of the chiefs mentioned earlier, it's very difficult if a guy does something in his or her private capacity to pick it up. The only times that we pick it up is by means of the community. However, at the CCFs, we have spoke with the station commanders. In the event, if there's a case coming against any metro, any municipal police officer, these cases needs to be reported to myself, and then we will investigate it. However, besides the disciplinary action, it's also pending on the criminal case at the SAPS.
Just let me just come in there so that others do not make the same mistakes. I'm a politician, and I make political statements. But here we are talking and interacting with managers who are not expected to make political statements. We will make sure that this happens. We will do this. If we're talking about corruption, I will expect a manager to say, yes, we have corrupt officials, so many this financial year, and this is what we have done with them as a manager. But as I speak as a politician, because I'm not managing, I will say they will do this. It's a political statement. So I'm asking for specifics. We want to know as to whether you're taking issues of corruption seriously. And we must get that from your responses. Because I am saying I'm a citizen. I go out there. People do not see a member of parliament in me. They see a person who sometimes they will ask for a bribe from men. And I am saying, are you aware and what are you doing about that? And I'm expecting specific answers, actions that you take as managers and not political statements. Leave that to politicians.
Thank you, madam. The direct answer at this stage, we did not receive any complaints from members in corrupt activities. However, as I said, we have a close relationship with the SAPS to report these, if there's any complaints against members, it needs to be reported to the Municipal Police Services. But up to that stage, we did not receive any complaints from the SAPS in terms of corrupt activities. And then there's the last, Madam Chair, last question that I just need to get clarity. The issue on the driver's licenses. Currently, the waiting period for learners and driving licenses within our area is approximately 18 weeks. So that gives us, it's almost 4 months. We also experience a huge influx from out people outside the Swartland municipality, like your Cape Towns and the Cedar and the other municipalities. So the waiting period currently for driver's licenses and learner's licenses is approximately 18 weeks. We, as you know, you are well aware that driver's license appointments within South Africa is a huge problem. And it's not just to the Swartland, it's throughout South Africa. With limited resources, you can only allocate a certain amount of tests per day. And we currently, due to the limited resources, we can only provide a certain amount of tests per day. I think that's... If there's any other questions, I think I covered most of the concerns.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, I want to answer the question of acting period so that you can be able to see. I'm just moving in this acting because I've acted from the 1st of April until, according to my appointment letter, the 30th of June, which is going to be 3 months. But I'm fortunate because I've been exposed to the management issues whilst I'm a deputy chief, so I'd be able to answer many questions.
How long has that post been vacant?
It's for the first month. The my predecessor resigned from the 1st of April. Yes. The issue of firearm control, like my colleague has already said, we are controlling our firearms in relation to the Firearm Control Act. And we are having our own internal firearm policies so that we can be able to control and manage our firearms. Again, we are guided by national policing standards how to deal with our firearms. And the other question is, how do we do our crime prevention? In Tshwane Metropolis, we are having any officer who is involved in a firearm-related offense is reported to SAPS, and then ICD and SAPS, and then the domestic violence. If a member is involved in a domestic violence, the Section 102 of the Firearm Control Act kicks in, and then you are dealing with the internal processes and the permits are confiscated. The permit is being cancelled and the departmental steps are taking place to deal with the member, whether a member is fit to possess a firearm. Even if there is a court order against him, the Section 102 kicks in because we take that as a domestic violence-related case.
I actually wanted to, at Swartland already, also follow up question. What is your, how do you distribute your firearms? Is it per, are you distributing per officer, or is it per shift that you distribute? With other words, what I'm asking is there one firearm per officer in use, or do you have the situation where firearms are shared by officers? With other words, today I use it, and tomorrow I'm not on duty and somebody else uses it.
How
many losses have you recorded?
I don't want to commit to say how many losses I haven't checked, but the information that if one needs, we can still provide. And then each officer has been issued with his firearm, and they're taking firearms home, and it's mentioned in the permit according to legislation. If a member is taking a firearm home, it has to be mentioned in the permit whether that person is allowed to take a firearm home or what.
Sorry for omitting that question. We have a SIF system, and we're not in the fortunate position to for each one to have their firearms, and we share firearms per SIF. No losses reported, and nothing that I'm aware of. We have no missing firearms.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We are one officer per firearm. The officers are also handing in their firearms after end of their shift, and if they've got permission for firearms to be taken home, obviously it will be sold on the permit as well, and they will also have letters in that regard. We've got nine lost of firearms to date. We must also take note that we're also responsible for traffic, the traffic department's firearms as well as the law enforcement department firearms. So to date, we've got in total traffic, law enforcement, and Metro Police, we've got nine.
Yes, ma'am. Just to let you know, only officers are issued with firearms on 9mm, but the pump guns, when there are riots, whatever, we don't issue each and every officer because they are limited. Maybe we issue 10 for the whole squad. Then these are not issued to individuals. They will be controlling our firearms. And the crime prevention, in Tshwane Metro Police, we are having three units that falls under crime prevention. The way we do our crime prevention, we are doing patrols, which is special operations. And when we are assisting again in crowd management, crowd control, and the main function that we are doing under this, Dr. Musa, is the social crime prevention, because we believe that we need to address the issues of social crime at that level. We are having programs that we are following, the Safer Schools program that deals mainly with drugs, and we are having the program on domestic violence where we are involving the we do the awareness campaign to the domestic violence of the safety of housebreaking, all those issues, and the awareness at schools and the churches. But we are mainly concentrating on social crime prevention, and also we are really assisting, or we are working together with SAPS when we are doing our social crime prevention operations, raiding the shebeens, even in our roadblocks, we are searching for illegal firearms, all those crime prevention related functions. If you are aware, according to our structures, the crime prevention, a lot of our contingents of our staff is mainly in traffic related issues and the bylaws. Crime prevention at Tshwane Metropolis, I'm having 48 members falling under crime prevention. But even at the regions, the regional offices that are dealing with bylaws, crime prevention, but there's a unit that is called crime prevention that is assisted, which is, we call it a tactical unit, that are doing the crime-related issue operations in the schools. The question of Mamelodi and that was, yes, we are aware of the, in our scorecard, we have identified 40 schools, and six of them are from Mamelodi. And we have taken upon ourselves, the South African Police Service of Brooklyn, and Mamelodi, and Sunnyside, we have signed service level of agreement on drug-related offenses. We are doing random testing at the schools because we have seen that these drug laws, they use school children to sell drugs, and they, it's easy for them to give to sell this to the children. And again, these issues are discussed in station crime combating forums. I don't know if somebody, you, because I hear today saying that when these things are reported to the police, they say police are involved. And if somebody thinks the police and or any official is involved, they've got the right to report that to the ICG or to the management of the station, so that we can deal with those people. And in this case of drugs, we think that the city of Tshwane, particularly in Mamelodi, we are also having the drugs operations that we are doing with the South African Police Services. But we'll be happy if that information can come to our fore, so that we can be able to tackle the specific problem that you are having. About the vacant positions, the thing that Metro Police, like when I did my presentation, Madam Chair, I said we are having three departments under community safety. Then for disaster management, fire brigade, and Metro Police, we are having close to 1,800 positions. And I don't know the number of Metro Police, but there are positions that are vacant that we need to fill. But based on the budget, we fill positions on availability of budgets. But currently, the way the staff complement that we are having, I think we can be able to deal with three functions. Then as when the budget is available, we fill certain positions. Criminality within the Metro...
Are you talking about positions that are funded
vacant,
or vacant and funded, or vacant but not funded?
Let them say, with the city of Tshwane, this month we'll see these positions are vacant. Next month, they're funded. Next month, if you want to move, they're unfunded. So, funded were less than 1,000. And most of the positions, like I'm talking about, are all unfunded now, based on the situation of the cash flow management within the city. You know, they'll make a certain number of positions per quarter funded, and then they'll inform the head of department that these are your funded positions. You can now identify critical positions that you need to fill. So is the way we are filling our vacant positions.
They, who? Because I think here we are being addressed by senior management of the Metro Police in Tshwane.
Yes.
And who therefore is responsible for budgeting and therefore for funding those posts. And if you're saying they, who? Because I'm expecting you to be funding those posts. Unless
because
you are telling me that no, you are one of the junior officials, I don't have a mandate. I'm talking about somebody who's responsible for budgeting and therefore who should know exactly as to when a post is funded or not funded and why. Who should account?
Madam Chair, the structure of the council, the corporate, HR corporate, we call it HR corporate, is the one who is having the mandate to deal with the issues of staffing. We, as the head of the departments, we do our reports and then we send it to a budget office according to our needs. Is there the corporate and the finance to decide whether there is availability of budgets? For an example, if maybe say I want to fill 10 positions and I said it's 10 million, they can say you can only fill, I'm going to give you 2 million. Then it comes back to me so that I can identify critical positions, even if it's within my needs. It's the way we are dealing with the filling of positions. But we are most of the time, we are striving to fill up the junior position, like appointing new Metro Police officers with the budget that we are having so that we can at least grow the service. attendance of the CPS. Yes, in Tshwane Metro Police, Debbie, we attend the CP. Honorable... It was my friend, sorry, Chairperson, Honorable Sefa. CPS in Tshwane, we do attend, and the chief of Krypton has already said, we are having more than 50 CPS, I don't have an actual number. And most of the meetings, they clash, but we make sure that all the meetings, at least 90% of the meetings are attended because what we have decided in Tshwane, we are now attending cluster meetings because there is where the CPF and they are being clustered so they can be able to cover all the areas within the city of Tshwane. So we said it is very important for us now to attend to cluster all the so that we can be able to attend.
1 minute is remaining. 1 minute is remaining for you.
The issue of corruption within the city of Tshwane, we are having the internal investigations where these offences are reported. And when the case has been reported, the investigators, we take the allegations and then we institute investigations.
How many have been investigated?
We are Currently, I'm not sure, but the one that I know from my level, we are having at least three, and they're all being investigated. And when there's a criminal, if there's a criminality within that, I encourage them to report it to the police, because it doesn't mean if the member has committed an offense like a bribery. Bribery is a criminal offense. It has to be reported to the police so that, or to the ICD, so that it can have fully investigated. Because with the Metro Police, within, we are just investigating on balance of probabilities, which is a misconduct. Now, when it has been referred to ICD and SAPS, they'll investigate. They're having investigative powers. They can even take the matter to court. And even not only the bribery, any criminal offense that the city, the Metro Police of Tshwane have committed, I've encouraged them to report, whether it's fraud or even an administrative staff, it has to be reported to the police. Because, you know, frauds are happening at our licensing and testing stations. Thank you, sir. I know my time.
Thank you very much. That was Tshwane Metro. Ekuruleni?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will start with the issues of corruption and bribery. We have a standards and integrity unit whose responsibility is to investigate all cases of bribery, corruption, misconduct, and on the basis of their recommendation and their investigation, we then charge the officers who we believe have a case to answer to. Currently, we have 149 cases which we are dealing with. They range from cases of bribery, corruption, cases of insubordination, cases of cases related to misuse of our vehicles, negligent driving, et cetera, We currently have seven of those are cases which we deem serious, and we are processing the suspension of those officers. We also work closely with the ICD. They take all our cases, especially those that involve the use of firearms. And after the investigations, they do make recommendations to us in terms of action, and we report to them what action we've taken. But they're also responsible then also for the opening of criminal cases where it is deemed that our officers are criminally negligent or liable. But on top of that, what we have also done recently is that we have just finalized what we call a code of ethics, because we think that part of the problem is that there is no ethical framework that is guiding our officers, and they lend themselves easily to misconduct. So we've just finalized it. It's just awaiting the approval of our council, and once it is approved, we will then use it to drum the message, beginning a training, but everywhere where officers are, to drum the message about their need for ethical behavior. In terms of firearms, I think our response will be similar to.
On average, how many? You said 149 now, but on average, how many have been found guilty of all these bribery, through corruption, and misconduct?
On average, we have about 10% success. The success rate is very poor on cases of bribery, because they are very difficult to prove. Often, the members of the public are unwilling to come and testify because we rely on them. But even when they've testified, there's usually very little proof. So they're difficult to prosecute. But we think that even as difficult as they are, the act of prosecution itself sends a message. So for us, it's not so much the success rate, but the act itself, I think, sends a message to officers to say that if you do wrong, we will get to you somehow, and one day we will find you killed. But in all honesty, our success rate is fairly poor. We would have loved it to be higher. But there are a lot of problems which we can talk about if you wish when it comes to handling some of these cases. In the main, I mean, members of the public complain and then they disappear. And we rely on their testimony to effect a proper case. Chair, I was talking about firearms. I think that we have the same governance regime as the others, basically derived from the Firearms Act. In the last financial year, we've only one recorded loss of a firearm. We have all our officers are issued with firearms individually, but they have to undergo a competency assessment, which is supposed to be done twice a year. And we've just reinstituted, there were some technical problems in the last couple of years, but we've just reinstituted that. So they go through a competency assessment and they issue the firearm and the firearm permit in accordance with that. As also Tswane explained, some of the firearms that are issued to individuals as and when there's a need. For instance, when we have public protests, some of the shotguns are then released to people depending on the needs there. Our firearms are audited internally. We run one audit per year, and also the ACPS sends auditors to audit our firearms registry and systems. We are happy so far that at least some of the things that they've pointed out in terms of weaknesses in our firearms management system, we are rectifying. there was a question about the VET crime prevention course. Well, basically, we put it there to illustrate our collaboration with some other institutions that offer courses which are related to policing. The VET crime prevention course is a six-month course, and we've encouraged some of our members to go there. In fact, we pay for some of them. The city gives bursaries. But there are also courses offered by the Tshwane University of Technology and in other institutions. When they are related to policing, we encourage our members to take advantage of those. The issue of whether we are essential service or not, I think it's true that we are all supposed to be an essential service for policing. But I think you'll find that in different municipalities, the issue is certainly different. For instance, in the city of Kuruleni, there is an absence of an agreement between the city and the unions to this effect. But we have argued in the last month that the absence of that agreement does not override national regulations. And we've been able to successfully secure a court order forbidding our members from going on strike in the last summer strike. On the basis of that, we will be able to take action against those of our members who went on strike. But I think the matter is only now being resolved. It had been neglected in the past. The issue of crime prevention, Chair, well, there are a lot of perceptions around it, but the truth of the matter is that I think the chief of Cape Town has already expressed a view that we commonly hold around crime prevention. Besides the dedicated efforts, which involve collaboration with the ACPS, our own direct interventions around crime prevention. But even as we do by law enforcement, even as we do traffic law enforcement, we're also contributing significantly to crime prevention. We arrest a number of suspects, wanted suspects, while conducting traffic law enforcement. We confiscate a number of contraband, drugs, etc., in the course of traffic law enforcement. We find illegal firearms as we enforce traffic law. In our roadblocks, when we check people, when we search their vehicles, we find all of these things. When we do bylaw enforcement, we close down buildings which are used for illegal purposes, criminal activities, etc., etc. So, you know, the slide cannot be cut so, in our view. You know, it's not a precise slide. When you talk about our mandate, I think we find that we overlap, in the 33 areas overlap. And indeed, I mean, public perception that we are doing only traffic law enforcement, I think is only informed by the fact that we're probably the most visible on the roads, the only most visible who are doing traffic law enforcement. So it's a challenge to think of us in that respect. Because in our absence, very few others do it. But that doesn't mean that's all we do. The Act determines that we have those three functions, and we perform them to the best of our abilities. I think the questions on training have been answered. I will not speak to those.
The issue of just on the training, you said courses offered by SAPS as and when they are available. I took note of the statement and wanted to know as to what exactly does that mean, as and when they are available, because it is suggesting that there isn't any plan that is in place. It's as and when they are available. What does that mean? That's what you said.
Yes, Chair. I think that the generals are here to further elaborate on this issue. But basically, I think the Chief of Cape Town tried to encapsulate the issue. The fact is that, on the trainer courses, for instance, I mean, so many people can go at a given time. So, you know, when courses are offered, it depends on the numbers that can be handled. So you would be on and off on the course depending on, you know, how quickly you were to respond and depending on the numbers. But in general, I mean, I think we have been able to take advantage of a number of courses from the ACPS and... as to if the question is whether there is a standing arrangement that on every course we participate, no, there isn't. There isn't a standing arrangement that we participate on. And in any case, Chair, I don't think we need all the courses that are offered by ACPS. Many of them are specialized to do with crime prevention and things that we don't do. We don't plan investigations. We don't collect intelligence. And they offer those courses. So it's not... There isn't a hard and fast rule that says we've got to be on every course that is offered by the ACPS.
Epperson? I'm not sure whether he's answering the question, because nobody has suggested that they have to attend all courses. What other chiefs have indicated was that they are getting support and also cooperation from the ACPS. So it sounds like, except for Ekurhuleni, they are not given the support that other provinces are given, because they are the only ones that get help when they are available. So they need to answer whether they offer their services regularly to other metros except to Ekurhuleni, because it says only and if they are available. So are they not available for them when they are available for the others?
Or maybe others did not specify, because indeed, if you're saying as and when they are available, it is suggesting a chaotic type of arrangement. I mean, training as training by its nature is formal. We're talking about a formal training by its nature is formal, and it has to be formalized. You expect an institution to know that per year we can take so many people so many times per year, because we have so many lecturers, we have so classrooms that can accommodate so many people, and that is known by everybody. And therefore, you will know that for this year, 2010, we will send 10 people because the accommodation, the number of people, the courses, and so on and so forth. That is my question, because if you think as and when they are available, I think for me that That's a statement that means a lot, and it leaves a lot really to be desired. And I'm not saying it is your mistake. Probably you're raising something which we need to verify with SAPS as to why do they not have a plan that is clear and known and communicated to metros. If they're not able to take any person this year, it must be known. You should know. It cannot be as and when they're available. That's my question. I'm coming to you, so you definitely are going to respond when it is your time.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Maybe an unfortunate use of words there. But I'm also not going to speak for the ACPS. I think that they're here, then they can speak for themselves. Indeed, in our case, Chair, we have, in fact, if I might, I just want to correct the impression, we do get courses. We get them from ACPS, and we're very grateful for those that we get. I mean, even now, as we prepare for 2010, we have taken advantage of a number of courses that they've been offering, and we're grateful for that. So the notion that we are not working closely, I think, is not correct. And if I gave that impression, then I want to apologize and retract it. That's not what the impression that I gave, that it was not intended to come out that way, that they're not cooperating with us. But indeed, Chair, the courses come to us. They don't come in the format where you get a list for the courses available, and you take advantage of them as and when you want to, or when the need arises. I think that how the SAPS works in that respect, they will answer for themselves. But we do get courses, and we do attend. We do send our people for training in the SAPS.
You have 1 minute to
run. Chair, I don't know if there's anything else that I'm missing here which I didn't.
I'm sorry, the answer to the question has not been satisfactory. At some stage, you say the police will answer for themselves. But you also still, when you went further, you said when they are available. You see, the chairperson was asking a question. Is there no formal plan where we say the training of Metro Police or whatever is going to be conducted in this fashion at this particular time, so that, because though you said that but when you were summarizing, you were still saying the same thing, that which only changed words, but you're still saying the same thing, that it doesn't look like there's a formal plan as to when and how training takes place. I will assume we are talking for Metro. For Metro.
Thanks, Madam Chair. If I may just give clarity on the issue. There is a National Training Committee where all the metros sit with the...
No, Commissioner. You will definitely get an opportunity to respond as such, because you are here, but not now. Okay. Please...
Chair, I'm not sure if I'm still expected to...
No, move on.
To clarify that issue.
No, please move on. You have to...
Thank you. The issue of vacancies... again, I mean, we have currently 122 vacancies, none of which are funded. The municipality has no money to recruit any additional people. But we continue to interact with our financial office to see if we can't at least be allowed to fill what we call critical vacancies. And they're warming up to the idea. I'm not sure if there's anything else, Chair, that I needed to comment on, which I didn't.
Yes, thank you very much.
Chairperson, I think there was one outstanding. When metro cars are seen parked for 2 hours, sometimes even 3 hours, under a bridge, now, do members of the public know that you are on duty or off duty? What message are you communicating? Can you be approached when you are during office hours? under the bridge for 2 hours, 3 hours?
I think that's a very difficult question to answer. I mean, we do speed trapping. There could be there for that purpose. I'm not sure. It could be that they are there specifically in a particular spot because it allows them to respond quickly to incidents on a particular stretch of freeway. I don't know. It's a technical problem. And I'm not sure that, I mean, when our officers are on duty, they're on duty, and we hope that they do the work that they're supposed to do. But I don't know if we have a situation where they can go to every member of the public and explain themselves that, excuse us, we are here because we want to, or we are able to respond quickly, or for whatever reason. If there's a feeling that members are absconding from duty, it is the responsibility of the public to get in touch with us at that point in time so that we can see whether that particular vehicle is there for a particular purpose or not. But it's very difficult to answer that question out of in this current environment. I mean, I don't know. They could be there for any particular reason.
And I think it would be helpful then for a number to be given, so to be called, so that people can receive help. Because when people are loitering, you can tell. When people are drinking under the bridges during office hours, you can tell. I'm talking about things that I've seen myself, not things that I'm hearing from people. So if members of the public are given a number where to report when such incidents are happening, it would be helpful. Well, can you give me the number now?
When people are seated in the car and chatting, sleeping, you can actually tell. It will be during office hours. Seated there, you drive past, you drive again after 2 hours, they're still there seated, chatting, literally chatting. Once we understand the issue of visibility itself, you know, that it can enforce a particular behavior. But sometimes you think it's not even about visibility, it's about people who decided that let's just go there and loiter, literal loitering, and they're not accountable to anybody. And I think it's a point to say, in a situation where you think as a citizen, this is now no longer visibility. This is literal loitering. This is somebody who's decided not to do his or her work. What then do we do? Do we have a number to phone so that we can actually report that as citizens? I think that's the crux of the question. Yes. But I think you've responded. And I want to move on, Honorable Craig.
Sorry, Chair, thanks. Just to make a comment, I mean, I don't think this should only be directed at Ekurhuleni. I think it should be directed at all the metros because it's an experience that you have all over. It's not just people sitting. You sometimes, I mean, I can say even in Johannesburg it happens where you sometimes see 10, 15 vehicles all parked together. There's no ways that they're busy with traffic enforcement because they're not. You can see it. And I think it would be helpful if not only us, but if the public could be made far more aware of where can you phone to report such incidents, because they do happen. But I just thought I should just state, it's not just directed to Ekurhuleni, it's directed to all of them.
If I might just ask here, Chair, certainly I know there are many instances where SAPS vehicles, for example, are seen parked at a casino for 3 or 4 hours, but the SAPS have a mechanism to track their vehicles. Is there any movement, or has anyone heard of any movement to introduce a similar mechanism within Metro to enable them to do so? They know exactly where their staff members are, as they've now had to introduce the SAPs to ensure they aren't goofing off under a bridge somewhere.
Let those metros that have not responded respond to those questions as well. And therefore, I will go to
Devin.
To Devin now, yes.
Yes, Madam Chair, I knew that I'm following Ekurhuleni. I'll start dealing with this particular matter. I understand how the members of this committee feel some other time in terms of other issues that are happening in their midst when they're moving around. But it's unfortunate because some of other things cannot just be explained just like that, because there's a lot of things that is happening in the policy. Unfortunately, it has not been put together by other chiefs previously. But with me, I've got an advantage because all my vehicles have got a seat rack installed on them. You find that some of the vehicles, you know, when you're using some of these machines are automated. Once you put it there, the machine starts running itself, but you cannot just leave it there. You have to guard it. So somehow one might catch up some nap in the process of cutting the thing, which is not an excuse, of course. Then in some other cases, we also meet up with SAPS for a combined operation where we're supposed to group in a certain area and all those issues. But fortunate enough, in Durban, we've got a number which is not only working for Metro, but for all the services, which you just phone and it responds to all your inquiry. Then you'll get an answer on that particular aspect. But really, it becomes a very difficult situation to say you just get an answer just like that, because there are so many things that might cause the policeman to be in that particular situation. Furthermore, there was an issue of ask about the illegal liquor outlet in Zululand University. I've taken note of that particular concern. Unfortunately, Zululand University is far away from my area, which is about 300 kilometers away. So I will talk to the station commissioner of that particular area to look into it. But even in my area, I must not make myself as a nice place. Even in my area, though we deal with liquor outlets, but unfortunately we could not be in a position to reach all of them. We are still striving to do so. On the issue of the vacant post, fortunately in my situation, when coming to the uniform personnel, I've got more members than what is given on the organogram. So, obviously, I don't have a vacant post. The only thing is just to adjust to the organogram, because obviously the organogram previously was allowing for fewer members than what we can afford in the city, because the city, after it has come together with the small municipalities, there were a lot of necessities of stretching that particular organogram. But in some other aspect, yes, you might have some problems in terms of the civilian staff, but it is not a major problem.
But what are you saying? Are you saying you have more staff than...
Yes, in fact, I was coming to that particular question. That's why I'm answering this question. There's a question that you ask, which I'm coming to it now. You have asked a question to me to say, why, when I'm finishing training, I've got people that have taken and I've got people that have left out. Now, what has happened, the people are trained by the skills development on a learnership. So we are people who are competent to train those particular people, but they are brought in by the skills development department. So we train those people. After training those people are supposed to be looking for employment elsewhere. But because of the attrition in terms of people going and coming back and other people getting sick and so on, I motivated for the city to get hold of the whole of those people that have successfully done the training to myself, because obviously as the year goes, the vacancies create themselves by other people going on pension. I've already calculated that one, and some other people resigning. So we find ourselves as we go, we start stabilizing. So they gave me the mandate, because I've given the proof how does the thing happen. In terms of those people whom we left out, is because they could not make it at all in terms of those important subjects, which they make them qualified to become policemen. Definitely I could not do anything with those particular people. I had to leave them out. So it's up to them whether they go back and redo those courses or whatever they do, but under the skills, not under me.
But you're not responding to the statement you've just made. You're saying you have more people than the number of your post on your organization.
Yes, yes.
And how are you paying people?
That's what I'm saying.
What does this mean? Are you saying you sleep... You wake up the following day, you hire 10 people,
no,
on your organogram. What does it mean?
Not that, Madam Chair.
What does it mean?
If I needed 15 people, and 20 people were trained, and I could prove to the city that last year I've lost 30 people, so obviously to train that other 10 people again is going to take me another year. So I've made a motivation to say, I've got so many people that are going on pension in the next coming 2 months. The other one are going out on pension in the next 3 months. So can the city allow me to take all these people based on that particular motivation?
I really will not want to come back to you again. But whatever explanation that you are giving, it does not explain your statement, which is so administratively wrong, extremely administratively wrong. That I'm going to resign in Parliament next year,
yes,
does not mean that there isn't a post I'm filling today. If all of us here are going to resign, Parliament will have 10 people resigning, and therefore 10 people on the organogram becoming vacant, on the organogram of Parliament.
For
anybody to say, I have more people than the number of positions on the organogram, that's extremely administratively wrong.
I understand you very well, Madam Chair. I understand you very well. I agree with you fully. I was talking to the other chiefs on the very same situation. I've stayed in the organization with a shortage of close to 100 members. And I was striving to fill those posts because immediately when I try to fill those posts, you find that I'm going back to 150 members up until this new system of learnership came afore. So when those people are trained, obviously they're expected to go and look for a job elsewhere. First, I requested on those particular bases. I know that I'm just up with about four people extra, but having motivated it, it has been agreed because they know that in 2-3 months' time, that particular thing is going to come in line. So I understand exactly what you're talking about. I'm not disputing what you're saying, but it goes about the motivation and the striving, as all everybody is complaining about the issue of having personnel. That's why I had to motivate that one, because what's the use of training these people? Then they fly away from to other places, and you know in about a month's time, you'll be looking for another 10 members extra. So that was also answering the very same question that you asked me about the issue of those people that were trained and some of the people could not be taken. So I think I've tried to explain that those who were not taken is because really there was nothing much you could do about them because they've just failed even those important aspects of the policy itself. Then there is an issue that has been raised on the issue of the beachfront. The beachfront, I came in as a police in terms of enforcement, but the fun park has been decided as by the city manager and the entourage of the LOC being the host city, so which I did not have a say much. But on the other hand, we have to ensure that all the necessary measures as been raised by the committee are being taken into consideration. We've got other departments that we're working together who are ensuring that even after hours, we've got lifesavers. Though people are not allowed to swim, but we've got lifesavers who are going to oversee exactly the same thing, that people are not swimming. For those who might have swum because they push their own thing, they still have to be saved. So, but they can't stop closing down the sea. The issue of driving school, I think we are also in line with what has been raised by Swartland. We've got a backlog of about 2 to 3 months in terms of the people who are in the process of getting the license. But in our situation, is a little bit different from Swartland. What you've just noticed, there are two different types of testing centers. We've got one that is handled by Metro on an agent basis and one that is handled by the National DOT. Now, the one that has been handled by DOT decided to put a lot of machines that is using cameras and everything, and you find that a lot of people now started running away from the thing and they started booking a lot in metros, which I think is going to be having a problem also if we acquire the same facility on ourselves. Because immediately when DOT put a lot of cameras on their driving vehicles and all sort of thing, a lot of people start running away now. They are booking more with metros. That's what put the backlog to be a little bit higher than what it is at the present moment, which is different from what Swartland is getting. Swartland, I think, is getting the overlap of people coming from Cape Town. There's another issue that I don't know whether was it explained properly for the committee. The ICD is always working with metros just like it is working with SAPS. And in that regard, I think all the cases that are handled in the SAPS environment, they are also handled in the Metropolis equally. We are also having the obligation for any matter that has happened within our metros to report into ICD, and the ICD, they decide whether we continue investigating and submit the report to them, or they come and take the report to themselves. I think it was not properly explained the way I was listening. It's as if now we are doing our own things. We've got a national forum where all the metros together with SAPS are sitting on a three-monthly basis. And ICD, of all the provinces where metros are also part and parcel of that particular meeting. They also remind us of some of other things that maybe we might have missed in the process. So we always ensure that we're always in line in terms of guarding against any abnormalities that are happening in the metro, starting from our police corruption, our negligence in terms of other issues like firearms, as we have already mentioned. Like in my situation, I had a big investigation of the ICD investigation and all sorts of things, because there was a lot of newspaper thing that came out. So it ended up coming out where was the problem, and the matter was given to ICD, and which was closed properly. To elaborate on that.
How many cases in your metro have been referred to ICD, and of those? The whole
file was referred to ICD for investigation, because they did not understand how does the whole matter of firearm coming on the newspaper at that time. So they investigated that. They also work out with the firearm unit in with the SAPS.
How many cases in your metro, Eteguini metro, have been referred to ICD in the past financial year?
Madam Chair, at the present moment, I can recall the one that I know, but I'm not certain that this is the only one. Why am I going to mention this one? Because this one have got members that got even arrested. We're talking of five members that were arrested. And out of those arrested, presently two convictions. The first one, it had a five-year suspended sentence, which we need to also get rid of that particular member. The other one has got a sentence, but is still appealing with this sentence, so it's still on suspension. The three cases have not been finalized yet. So I'm not certain that the five that I'm giving you is only that particular member, but I'm just giving that one because I know for a fact of those particular cases. That is all that I can report about those particular things. Then the issue of human trafficking that was asked initially. We've got training with other departments that is taking place for the metro specifically to sensitize our members about human trafficking. Then we've got representatives that are working full-time with those particular departments to see the issues of human trafficking, so that at least if there is a need, we must also come in. And we are also deployed full-time with SAPS on those spots where the human trafficking usually takes place, like in the airports and other areas and so on and so on. So definitely there is something that is happening, but not in a scale in which everyone will be satisfied, because I don't think even the SAPS has reached a limit yet. But we are doing everything in our power to ensure that we uplift our knowledge and also the ability to deal with human trafficking.
You have a minute, sir.
Okay. I'm just rushing those issues that are really close to me. Oh, there's one question that was left. Unfortunately, the honorable member has just left at the present moment. There was a question that he has asked in terms of the enforcement in the peak times. What has happened that side, in my situation, for instance, I think other chiefs maybe might have another different scenario. All the accidents that are happening in the whole country, besides that they have been reported to SAPS, they ended up coming to the metro, to a certain department that is a trafficking department in the council. And that itself tells the council when certain type of fatalities are taking place and what type of fatalities. And what you have noticed in our city, you find that most of the cases that are happening of the accident are happening in the peak of the morning and maybe in the peak of the afternoon or late at night, and they differ from one another. The one that are happening in the morning, you find that they may be caused by unroadworthiness of the type of vehicles, which if you can even see them, even yourself, Madam Chair, you'll be shocked. That pushes us to do that type of an enforcement at that particular time, because during the day those vehicles are parked. They've got a certain purpose that they are used for during that particular time. In the afternoon, you'll also find some of the very same vehicle taking a chance because of the very same peak. But in the evening, you find more of the drunken drivers. Most of, that's why we've got a lot of drinking and type of roadblock type of a thing. So there are some other situation that pushes a type of enforcement at that particular time. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sorry, the issue of firearms, you've referred to the special case, but I think this question is very relevant specifically to Etiquette. In terms of the loss of firearms, what is your policy and how many firearms lost in the past year?
In the issue of the firearm lost in the past year, Madam Chair, I'll be lying, but there are very few because we've just adopted a very good style after that particular audit that has been done by ICD, that our firearm unit, every month they're doing the weapon verification by firearm unit. Beside the annual audit that is done by audit itself. And from time to time, we're also having a visit from the National Firearm Unit from Pretoria. But they don't come, they don't tell us. They just come, they phone us and tell us that they'll be coming and just do that particular audit. I'm just mentioning the one that I know for sure that we're doing. One of our firearm section, we're doing verification every month. Then biannually, the audit come and do the annual twice a year. The audit from Pretoria just come and unreportedly, and they just come and do that thing. So what I can just say in short is that I'm happy with the way the firearm is being handled at the present moment.
Just
to be specific on the questions of firearm, we've lost nine the firearm, six of them from the young officers that get excited of getting a new firearm, not putting it right at home. Two of them, we've lost them in situations of domestic violence, and we've since recovered them. One of them was the senior manager who didn't put it in the safe. We are dealing with the cases. We've got a firearm review board internally consisting of ourselves, the senior managers. We also report them to the South African Police Services. No one is allowed to leave with an Uzi or with a Palm Action or with an R5. Those are issued on daily basis. We bring it back in the afternoon. So that's how we are specifically dealing with the issue of the firearms. Those that have been lost in arrest situations and in physical situations where we are fighting with the criminals, we have a good history of recovering them. So these are the ones that we have lost. We've tried to run a policy on the young, newly qualified officers, because they tend to be the guys that tend to lose the firearms. But I'm fairly happy with the way we're managing them. So far, we've been successful in managing them. The cases are continued to be investigated by our teams, and I'm quite confident that we will find them. On the issues of the bribe, Madam Chair, one of the things that is very disappointing in South Africa is that no one criticizes the public about the fact that they offer the officers money. Now, in Johannesburg, all our cars have an anti-corruption number. We arrest and we charge departmentally the people that give bribe or the officers that take bribes. Where we have challenges is the interference and the delays by the unions in terms of the processes that are involved in charging people. But I'm very happy with our success rate. We are very good at it. If we find you got the money, you know that is bye-bye for the job. But I think Chairperson would be very happy for the councillors, their year, and the members of parliament to play their role equally so, discouraging as many members as you can. Because where I have been in roadblocks, members of the public offer. Officer takes out a book, a member of the public wants to offer some money. So something that we must work on, because it's a huge embarrassment. The other area of embarrassment is in licensing. Some of the licensing centers, for example, people work with driving schools where you pay 3,000 rand, 4,000 rand, you are guaranteed to be paid. We've not been successful. Together with the South African police, we are running projects. The biggest projects we, problems with those projects is that it's a lot of collaboration. We never find the actual money because the money is paid to the driving school, not the examiner. So something that we are working on, it's something that we have to defeat. Because, you know, many young people now who cannot drive, the ones that you see on the road, get these licenses, and they're the biggest causes of accidents in South Africa. They get a license, they still ride a learner at the back of the car. You can see these are people who didn't get it legitimate. So it's one area where we are weak, but we are doing something. We're doing something about it. On the last point that I want to deal with is the issue of the absorption. We've discussed it as the chief of police, is that our view is that it's a political decision. The politicians must take a decision, debate the issue thoroughly amongst themselves, and give us a cue. We will take the cue from the political level. Thanks, Madam Chair. I think the other chiefs have covered some of the critical issues. I need to deal with this one. This is very important. This thing, we really request that we be given the power to continue with our work. Sometimes we take a tactical decision, like we did when we were raiding a hostel. We say everybody leaves the cars here. We are getting into the cars of the South African police because we don't tell these people where we are raiding because some of them own taxis. Now, sometimes members of parliament and councillors see the cars there. But they've got no total picture of the tactical decision that we took as commanders. Now, there must be a difference between decisions that we take as commanders and abuse. So an abuse, when a car is at a shopping center and it's a marked police car, there's something wrong with it. It's an abuse. We must deal with it. But sometimes we do take a tactical decision that we want 15 cars here. And we have speed section people. Speed section people work under the trees. They sit there and hide the camera. That's their job. That's the brief that we give them because that unit is responsible for speed. Also,
I just want to cut you there.
Okay.
Because I think we're not talking about people who are doing their work.
Okay.
And we understand it very clearly that they stand, they hide. We see them.
Okay.
We drive on these roads and we are victims sometimes. Yes, we are stopped, we are searched like any other person. But we're talking about a person or a car that will be parked there and people seated, munching whatever, they sleep, they talk, you drive again, it's the same thing. They're not even looking at the cars that are passing by, literally. They don't see your car, you might be driving at whatever speed, they will not even see that because they are not even just looking at the cars. They're talking, they're laughing. We're talking about that. We're talking about people who will decide to stop three cars or four cars. And they are just talking. They are not doing, it's not any operation. It's loafing. So we're not talking about people who are doing their work. We can actually see that and we appreciate it. And we understand the issue of visibility as a program. You know, that sometimes they will not stop you, even if you're doing wrong. But they will not stop you. But for the message that you've seen them, you'll correct yourself. We understand that as well. But you're talking about people who are just loitering for the whole day. Loitering, literally sleeping in the car. We see them talking. You can actually see that these people are absorbed in whatever discussion. And it has nothing to do with their work. And they've been doing that for more than an hour and so on. Next thing they get to the car, they go wherever. They say it's tea time or it's lunchtime. They've not been doing anything for the whole day. A day's work for a day's pay. I think it is also our concern. So that is what we really are talking about here. Not about whatever. We're not talking about that. And that is why I think I have got to stop you. But I just want, maybe before you keep I stop you, Red. I'm sitting here. And I will request you to respond because you are on the floor. Should I conclude that Metro Police are sort of jack of all trades? And champions of none.
I think it would be a wrong conclusion.
Why?
I think that we you've asked the question between the difference between traffic, Metro Police, and the South African Police. Our first qualification is to be traffic, and then we do the police elective. The difference between us and the South African police is that they have the power to investigate. We don't have the power to investigate. That's the only difference. But I think the metros have come with a history, and we've proved ourselves in the last 5-10 years that we've been here that we are making a difference. We are good at visibility. You can ask General Lamourie, for example, in Johannesburg, we led the South African police in the fight against xenophobia. So we have leadership. We changed the mood. We influenced the thinking in the South African police services. It's an interesting development. The oldest police department in South Africa is the Durban City Police. Now, I think with us coming into the scene, I mean, Commissioner Lamour comes to Johannesburg and actually asks us, how do you guys put your freeway patrols? We are clever when it comes to tactics, so we have a tactical approach to issues, and we emphasize the thinking side. So, Madam Chair, I can say a lot. I'm really proud of being a Metro Police officer. So I want to leave it there.
Yeah, I wanted to irritate you so that you can explain these things. Because you're not giving us. We want to know exactly. We said this is an information session. We want to know exactly what the Metro Police are doing, you know. And that is why I'm asking this question in a manner that will actually irritate you.
I just want to correct something, because the Johannesburg Metro Police head has now said it is now the second person saying this, and we must be careful that we don't, by repeating things, it becomes the truth. The minister never said that the metros must be absorbed within the police. That's not what he said. He said that he's working towards achieving the constitutional requirement of a single police service, and that he has instructed the Secretariat to do research on that matter and to come forward with different models on how it can be done, and that it will be a long process where consultation will take place as well. At least one of the metros around here indicated today that they're using intelligence, which is not the right of Metro Police to use. So already we are on dangerous grounds. So I just want to correct this thing. There's no absorption. It hasn't been talking about. None whatsoever.
General Lamour, do you want to say anything after this presentation?
Madam Chair, just the issue on firearms, I just want to, I know the Metro Chiefs will not agree with me, but since 1999 until 2000, since 1999, 2000, when the metros were established, they had lost or stolen firearms of 1,337. But during the last few years, the control over their firearms really improved a lot, as they reported now for the last financial year. And really, from our side, is that their cooperation when it comes to this is very, very excellent. Then our three-monthly meeting where we discuss a lot of these issues, especially when it comes to the strategy or the national strategy or the provincial plans. It is in place. All Metro Chiefs must submit their operational plans to the Provincial Commissioner, as been stipulated in the regulations on the Metro Police. And jointly, they then decide how to approach their operational plans during that period of that specific financial year. I think the issue on training, General Kruger will just address you on that issue. Thanks.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, we also have a forum, a training forum, where we meet on a quarterly basis with all the chiefs and their training managers. And every year we drop a training plan for the year. So every metro knows exactly what sort of support we are going to give the metros itself. Over and above that, they do make additional requests. And if we can accede to our budget or our facilities allow for it, we do give additional to the plan, which would be the request from a specific chief itself. Thank you, Chair.
General Lamour, the issue of government gazette with regards to, can you explain that one?
Madam Chair, there is a government gazette number 20142. And in this government gazette, the regulation was issued with reference to the Police Service Act. And in this police in this regulations, all the duties and functions and mandates are explained of the Metro Police. I'm quite surprised. I think the Chief of Cape Town is the only one who refer to this document. CPFs, it's been stipulated how they must be interact with CPFs also, how they must interact with the provincial police commissioner also. Everything has been explained in this document. So I think the Metro Chiefs knows it. They know it very well. Maybe the fact that they know it, they didn't refer to it, but it's, everything is in here. And we will, as we stated to you, we will let you get a copy of this document that you can see everything is in here, and I think you will be more informed when going through this specific document, Madam Chair.
Except that they did not refer to it, which is really worrying, because surely when you even ask as to where do you derive your legal mandate, surely you would expect that they will immediately refer to that government gazette, and they didn't after so far. But really, we no longer have time. Let me, I think, in closing, first thank you, Metro Chiefs, because you referred to as Chiefs, for responding positively to our request and to our invitation. The information that we have shared today is vital to this Portfolio Committee on Police. We believe that you are playing an important role in the fight against crime. We indeed have a challenge of corruption. One would wish one time to hear from you that you indeed have anti-corruption strategies that you are implementing, that you are also evaluating as to whether they are effective enough. It's something else to explain what you are doing, but it's something else to have a policy document that is being implemented, known to everybody, and as such can from time to time be evaluated. When you talk about corruption, I'm saying this really because you are stopped and stopped from time to time, and somebody is stopping you just for the sake of saying but you can pay and so on and so forth. And for me, that is serious corruption. I agree fully with the view that says prosecution itself, by its nature, is punishment. But also, it is also true that our officers get to know these things, that I will be prosecuted, they will not prove it, I will go back to my work, I will continue doing it. They will do it again, they will not be able to prove it, so I can continue doing it. It's possible for them to do that. I think at some stage we'll have to find a way of dealing with such things, difficult as they are, and I agree it's very difficult to prove that beyond any reasonable doubt, but I think we can do something about it. I as a portfolio committee, when we interact with managers, we expect them to have information at their fingertips, because they are dealing with these things every day. At least somebody must know that last week or this month or the last year, when we're finalizing our things or counting and so on, we got so many, and therefore in average, and that will mean 1, 2, 3. It really worries them sometimes to think that managers do not have information just there. You know, they're not able to give you information like that on some of the issues that, for one, they make up their job description. I'm not trying to suggest that I've picked that up in this meeting, but I think we can do better. We do better if we hold people, our subordinates, accountable.
I don't believe that it will be Durban only, or is it Johannesburg only, that will say we have 9 cases. And I don't buy the view that it can be one case in a year. Not where we are driving. If that is the case, the implications could be that there is absolutely no supervision. And therefore, these things happen, and nobody is picking them up, maybe because they are difficult to prove. And therefore, people know that we're not going to do. I think I will buy to the views raised by, is it Ergurulen, to say difficult as they are, but we still try to deal with them, and these are the cases. Because I think I will agree with the number 149. It looks big, but for me it says they are doing something. Then a zero number, wherever I drive, I'm stopped. Somewhere I'm asked for a bribe. And it will be only when you say, no. What is this? And you report these issues. I think somewhere there is lack of supervision and holding people accountable for their omissions and commissions. I just want to say that. But I really think that after this meeting, we have a better understanding of what Metro Police are doing. I can at least explain to the next person now as to what my understanding is, as to what the Metro Police are doing. And for that, we really want to thank you. I think I have to thank the councillors that are here. It's unfortunate that in a meeting such as this one, they don't have a right to ask questions. I know they would have wanted to ask questions because I think they're dealing with these issues on a day-to-day basis, and therefore they know questions to ask immediately. But unfortunately, it's not possible in a meeting in Parliament. But really, I just want to thank you for being here. And you're most welcome to attend our meetings anytime they're open. I think probably you've learned one or two lessons, if there are any. But we thank you really that you've shown interest, keen interest in this meeting, particularly this one. Thank you very much for that. I just also want to thank the department for being here. We did not invite the department. They decided to come. And I want to believe that they did not intimidate you. Their presence was not intimidating to you, but really I thank the department for being here. I want to thank everybody who attended this meeting, media people and everybody who attended this meeting, most of all, so that I continue to be the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. I must thank the members of the Portfolio Committee who are always up to challenges. I think this is the first meeting, they said, and surely questions to ask and so on would have been very difficult, but I think they are always ready to deal with whatever situation. I really want to thank them very much. And before I close this meeting, I really want to request all of us to immediately leave, because I'm requesting the members only, to remain behind for a minute. There's something which I think I have to share with them, so that we don't waste time. Thank you very much. The meeting is